You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today when I came in, I had really no idea what I was going to talk about. And that rarely happens. Usually I have one, two, and sometimes three or four different news stories, breaking news stories that I want to cover. Now, if you listen to talk radio, as well as the newscast, the big story, which I'm not going to cover at all because I think it's boring, is the fight in the House of Representatives as who should be the new Speaker of the House. Should it be Kevin McCarthy or should it be someone else? Well, Kevin McCarthy announced today around noon that he was withdrawing from the race. He's making that ultimate sacrifice. He simply didn't have the votes to get elected, folks. And as I said on yesterday's show, that he did damage to the House Special Investigation Committee of Benghazi by his rather thoughtless comments, and he even admitted it didn't help him, regarding the fact that he volunteered. He wasn't asked about Benghazi, that because of that committee, Hillary Clinton's poll numbers have been going down. Well, the purpose of the committee is to invest Benghazi. And frankly, she shouldn't be the center of attention on Benghazi because it's largely a Central Intelligence Agency operation. That doesn't mean she was not intimately involved, and there should be some questions regarding what she said, for example, to the president, both before, during, and after that crisis. So McCarthy is pulling out. Some names that have been floated, but I really don't think he's going to bite on this, is that Paul Ryan, who made it very, very clear he was not interested in the House Speaker position. Several people in the news have indicated that he's probably the best choice and could get elected. I look at it and say, who cares? Who cares? Now, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Republican at all. I've given up on them. The Democrats are beyond the pale, and the problem with the Republicans, when they're in power, when they have the House, the Senate, and the presidency, they ran up huge deficits and got us involved in a war that now the American people have a lot of regrets about. I'm really not interested in this story. And I think if you ask most of the American people, either they're not aware of it, or if they are aware of it, they have no idea who should be the House Speaker. I certainly don't. Now, I would much prefer a conservative. And by that, one test is the Conservative Review has a scorecard, and it really evaluates major votes over many years of the people that have been in Congress and gives them both a letter grade and a number grade. And the reason why I wasn't very excited about McCarthy is his letter grade was F. And I double-checked the number. I was right. He's at 45%, which is better than John Boehner at 35%. But they're not conservative. They're not libertarian. They're not conservative. They're big government people. And that's the problem. Both in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, we have two parties that are largely big government parties. They're not for limited government. They're not for fiscally responsible government. They're for interventionism, both domestically and abroad. And that's who is running and has been running both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party today. So I don't really care who they elect. Well, I prefer conservative. Doesn't look like you're going to get one because the numbers are on the sides of the what today is called the RINOs, Republicans in name only. We used to call them Rockefeller Republicans or Country Club Republicans. They're liberals. They're liberal progressive Republicans. So I'm not going to cover that. I have no real opinions. I have no favorites. I wish they'd get it over with and move on. It's a distraction. Now, what caught my attention was the fact that if you listen to the news and if you listen to talk radio, and I listen to several talk shows, there was no discussion at all as to what's happening in the Middle East, and in particular, what's happening in Syria. And the Syrian situation is very, very dangerous. Why? The United States in Iraq has been flying missions, mainly F-16s, or bombing Islamic State targets. Now, they're not doing a lot of bombing, but they are doing some. One number I heard floated, I have no way to confirm this, is they fly about 10 missions a day. Now, that's not very many. If you truly want to destroy and contain the Islamic State, you should be flying hundreds of missions every day. That's how you destroy the Islamic State. So it's obvious we're not trying to destroy the Islamic State. Slowly but surely, we're hitting some targets, but 10 missions a day? You got to be kidding me. So I looked at and investigated what's happening in the Middle East. Now, a week ago, I did do a show on the entry into Syria by the Russians of their military aircraft, as well as sending tanks and other arms and munitions into Syria. You need to understand the Assad regime, the Assad family, has had a long relationship, first with the Soviet Union and now with Russia. And they're back. And they're supporting what I would consider a client state. They're propping up Assad. Now, Assad is engaged in a brutal, violent civil war with his own people. And the Assad regime, as far as I'm concerned, the day it falls, I'll celebrate. But the problem in Syria is there are no good sides to pick. For example, the Islamic State controls a large section of Syria towards the west, and in western Syria, Raqqa is where the Islamic State is headquarters. And for those that are new to the show, before I forget, I have a companion blog, and that's pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And if you go there, at the very top, you'll see a photograph of me in the studio, and right below it, links to the last 60 to 80 shows. And this is show 549. And tomorrow will be a long show, 550, which I'm looking forward to, because most of my weekly shows have been right around an hour, and I usually edit it down to about maybe 40 minutes. So Friday I can go long, which means I can have more than an hour show, even when it's edited. So I'm looking forward to Friday's show. But I wanted to broaden the topic, not just Syria, and really look at Barack Obama's foreign policy and try to make an assessment. Has it been a success? I think most Americans would say it's been a failure, an utter, complete failure. Look what's happened in Libya. Look what happened in Egypt. We did replace Mubarak, but we backed the wrong side. The Muslim Brotherhood and the military threw them out. And now Iraq more and more is being controlled as well as influenced by Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, mainly because the Persians are Shia. Again, I need to give you a minute background information for people that really aren't up on this. Islam has two major sects, if you will. The first is the Sunnis that represent about 90%, 89 to 90%. And then you have the Shia, which represents roughly 10%. And the Shia, I'm not going to give that history because we don't have time, and that would be a big detour. But the Shia predominate in Iran. I would say most of the population is Shia. Not all, but most. They also are the majority in terms of the population in Iraq. Even though in Iraq you have the Arabs that are Shia versus which speak Arabic. And in Iran you have the religion is Shia, the language is Farsi. And the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt are the majority. And in the Middle East, they're Arab. So neither because of the religious differences, because of the ethnic differences, they never really gotten along. Now, there have been periods of peace between the two sides, but generally, it's just under the surface. It can break out into violence, and the worst case being a civil war, and that's exactly what we have going on in Iraq and Syria today. Iran is backing the Syrian regime of Assad, who's Alawite, and they're using their proxies, Hezbollah, to support the Assad regime. And because of that, the Sunnis, in particular the Arabs, feel threatened by Iran, and they should be. And this is nothing new, folks. There's a long history. At one time, the Persian Empire was massive, one of the biggest empires in the world. And it extended, for example, to Egypt and into Europe. And what the Persians or the Iranians today want to do is bring back that empire, or caliphate, which is successor to Muhammad. The problem is the sheer numbers. Why Iran has a fairly large population. Last time I checked was about 75 million, 80 million, somewhere in that vicinity. And why Saudi Arabia has 25, 30 million. Egypt is much larger. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Egypt, I would say 80 million plus. But they're Sunni. They're Sunni and they're Arab. What we're seeing in the Middle East today is a very violent, bloody civil war where the Islamic State, which are Sunnis, are killing Shia in Iraq and anywhere else they find him, and really anyone of any other religion other than Sunni and their version of the Sunni or Muslim religion. So you have a religious, sectarian civil war in the Middle East. Now, what complicates it is the fact that Russia, like I said, has had a long-term relationship with Syria and particularly the Assad regime. And that regime bought a lot of its weapons from Russia, and before that, the Soviet Union, as did Egypt, by the way, and as did Libya. And what has happened is Putin has placed aircraft, upwards of 50 aircraft, into Syria. They're building a special base for them near outside of Damascus, which is the capital. They have a base, a Navy base, Tartus, that's on the coast, the northern part of Syria, north central part. And what happened yesterday, and I didn't hear much in the news, this is what's puzzling me. I heard virtually nothing about this. Usually there can be a delay. I understand this. But there was nothing in the newscast about this. Now, I came in, started to do some research, and I quickly said, well, this is the story, or should be the story on the news tonight, and it really should be the topic of discussion and talk radio. Now, I know one of the reasons why this story probably has not been front and center, and it is a serious problem. The American people in general are simply not interested in foreign policy. And many of them, the majority of them, are not interested that much in politics. So you got really two problems if you're a talk show. I'm interested in politics. I'm interested in foreign policy. As a matter of fact, this morning, just by chance, I didn't know I was going to do this program at all. I was reading a book about Iran. And I just got started with it, but it went through this long history of the Persians and the Persian Empire. And you need to understand why we have conflict between the United States and them. And there's a long history. I'm not going to get into that. The focus of this is the fact that the Russian Navy, that has a small fleet of frigates and a corvette, fired 26 missiles from that fleet, which is roughly 1,000 miles away from their targets in Syria, but they launched cruise missiles, long-range cruise missiles, to take out targets in Syria. Now, the complaint of the United States was, you're not really attacking the Islamic State. That's true. But they are attacking the rebels of the Assad regime, and that's why they're there. And one of the groups that is being attacked is al-Nusra, which is an affiliate of al-Qaeda. At one time, the Islamic State, what today is the Islamic State, used to be al-Qaeda in Iraq, were unified with al-Nusra, but they had a split up of the groups because the Islamic State did not want to pledge allegiance to al-Qaeda. So they went their separate ways. They're rivals today, and they've been attacking each other. So what's happening today in the Middle East is we have the war which has been going on now for several years, the civil war in Syria, it's expanding. What happened is the Syrian army has sent a large number of troops against the rebels in the Homs and Hama area. And the missiles, and there have been, first of all, they've had air attacks in that area, and they've also had air attacks in Aleppo, which is a very large city in northern Syria, and it's under rebel control, by the way. Parts of it, though, it's definitely under rebel control. So where I'm leading up is, what should we do? Because it's apparent that Barack Obama's strategy from leading behind and strategic patience simply has not worked. When you leave an area, you leave a vacuum. And we've seen it in Iraq. Who came in? The Iranians have come in. Doesn't mean we don't still have a presence there. We do. But the major outside influence today is not the United States. They never really wanted us there. It's Iran. Because they're providing the Iraqi government military equipment, troops, and advisors. And remember, they share the same religion, even though the Iranians are Persians, if you will, and the Iraqis are largely Arabs. But they have the same religion, and that's the key. The United States still has aircraft there because we have been, like I said, flying missions more or less every day, but not very many of them. And what we have in Iraq and Syria today is that civil war between the Islamic State, used to be Al-Qaeda, in Iraq against the Iraqi regime. I'm glad the U.S. doesn't have many troops there. It does have several thousand, over 5,000, but it's not combat troops. It's really advisors and special forces. And the special forces are largely, and they have a very dangerous mission, have to pinpoint targets to take out various ISIS, or I call it the Islamic State, by the way. That's what their name is. That's what they want to be called. And they are very much Muslim. The Salafist. I'm not going to get into that, but that's a branch of Sunni Muslim. And they don't take prisoners. They kill people that don't share their religious beliefs. It's that simple. They either make you a slave or try to ransom you, or if you're a Shia, they kill you on the spot or torture you and then kill you. And the feeling's mutual. The Shia do it the same to the Sunnis, especially Islamic State. So we have a raging civil war. Now, I do not want the United States to go back and intervene. And yes, the Islamic State is evil. But there's a lot of evil going on in that Middle East, in Syria and in Iraq. And throughout the Middle East. So the question is, what should Barack Obama be doing? Has his foreign policy of leading behind and strategic patience working? I think the general consensus is, no, it's not. It's been a total failure, and that's where I come down. But what should the United States be doing today? Given the situation as it is right now. And I was curious, what about one of the leading candidates for president, such as Donald Trump? What is his foreign policy on the Middle East? And I'll play a clip. I got to skip on down. Here's Donald Trump on what his foreign policy would be in the Middle East.
Vladimir Putin today was at the UN, so is Barack Obama. They could not be more different when it comes to Syria. Barack Obama saying he wants Bashar al-Assad removed from power. Putin says he thinks that's an enormous mistake not to cooperate with Vladimir Putin. Which man is right?
Okay, so I've been saying this for a long time, and I've kept it low, and I really understand what's going on in Syria, because you look at it, first of all, it's a total catastrophe, it's a total mess, and we're helping to make it a mess. Now, we have ISIS, and ISIS wants to go after Assad, but we're knocking the hell out of him, even though it's not a very full-blown thing. We're still dropping bombs all over the place, and, you know, look, they're not exactly loving life over in Syria. So we're stopping them, to a certain extent, from going after Assad. You have Russia that's now there. Russia's on the side of Assad, and Russia wants to get rid of ISIS as much as we do, if not more, because they don't want them coming into Russia. And I'm saying, why are we knocking ISIS, and yet at the same time, we're against Assad, let them fight, take over the remnants, but more importantly, let Russia fight ISIS if they want to fight them. Let them fight them in Syria. Now, we can fight them in Iraq, but if you think about Iraq, we've spent $2 trillion, thousands of lives lost, wounded warriors who we love and I love all over the place. What do we have in Iraq? And did you see...
You said you'd put ground troops on the ground in Iraq.
Well, we're going to have to do something with ISIS. I was totally against the war in Iraq, and I was from the beginning. 2003, yes. 2004, because you're going to destabilize the Middle East, I was right. And should be given credit, because out of everybody running, I'm the one person that said, don't do it. And in
How
fact,
do you put
Bush,
ground troops in Iraq, though, but not in Syria? I mean,
well, because
there is
I'm
no
saying,
border, essentially,
look,
between those countries.
Let Syria and ISIS fight. Why do we care? Let ISIS and Syria fight. And let Russia, they're in Syria already, let them fight ISIS. Look, I don't want ISIS. I don't want ISIS. ISIS is bad. They're evil. When they start doing with the head chopping and drowning of everything, these are really bad dudes. So I don't want them. But let them fight it out. Let Russia take care of ISIS. How many places can we be?
So essentially you're saying let Russia take care of ISIS. If Vladimir Putin wants Bashar al-Assad to stay because it makes sense for him, you're okay with
so
that.
So I've watched him a lot, and I've made a lot of money watching people. You know, deals are people, okay? People say, what is a deal? How do you make good deals? It's all about analyzing people. So I've watched Assad, and I've watched a little bit on the other side. The problem is the other side of Assad, we have no idea who they are. They
so
probably are ISIS. I'm saying, are we better off with Assad? We have no idea who these people are. We give them weapons. We give them ammunition. We give them everything. Aaron, we have no idea who. I mean, maybe it's worse than Assad. So what are we doing? Why are we involved? We have to get rid of ISIS, very importantly. But I look at Assad, and Assad, to me, looks better than the other side. And, you know, this has happened before. We back a certain side, and that side turns out to be a total catastrophe. Russia likes Assad, seemingly a lot. Let them worry about ISIS. Let them fight it out. Now, in Iraq, we have to do it. We shouldn't have been there in the first place, but we left the wrong way. When Obama took us out the way he took us out, that was a mistake. We should never have been there in the first place.
So when we talk about the Middle East, you know, you've been critical of the Iran nuclear deal. But unlike some, you haven't said you'd throw it out. You said you'd make it a better deal.
Well,
that's
I'm a person that's a business person.
So you just can't improve the deal.
But Aaron, with that being said, and you've known some of the deals, I've bought into really bad contracts knowingly. And I bought them cheap because they're bad contracts. And I've taken those bad contracts and made them great. I've made a fortune. What you have to do is this. I will analyze that contract so strongly. I will go after, and believe me, if they violate that contract, they have problems. But what they've done is they have totally out-negotiated us. The fact that they get $150 billion, the fact that we have the 24-day wait period, and it's actually much more than that.
Before we can inspect, yes.
Oh, no, it's crazy. I mean, 24 days before we can inspect. The fact that they self-inspect, and how about the prisoners we don't get? We don't get anything. There's one other thing that nobody talks about. If Israel ever attacks, if they ever attack Iran, there really is a clause in there, the way I read it, and I'm pretty good at this stuff, we're supposed to protect Iran from Israel. I mean, we're supposed to fight Israel. So that's not going to happen. We're supposed to fight. How do they allow a clause like that in there? So it's a horrible deal. With that being said, I will police that to a level that they will not believe even exists.
That was Donald Trump. I think his foreign policy analysis and what he's saying he would do if he were president is very good. I'll say outstanding. It sure beats the current president. In other words, there's no good choices in Syria. Let them fight each another, kill each another, destroy each another. See, the harm has already been done to the Syrian people. You have roughly 10 million Syrians that have left their homes. 4 million, roughly, have fled to other countries. another 6 million are displaced, although they've moved out of the areas where they are to some other place in Syria, for the simple reason you have a civil war going on, and both sides are trying to kill each other, and if you happen to live there, you might be dead too. And we've had an estimated, no one really knows, that approximately 250,000 Syrians have died. It's probably much higher. Who knows? But the point I'm trying to make is this. What got us in this mess? Why is, for example, Libya today, parts of it are controlled by the Islamic State, parts of it are controlled by Al-Qaeda, parts of it are controlled by various militia groups, and again, it's very much geographic-based, and what is happening in Europe? We have hundreds of thousands, really millions, are fleeing northern Africa, primarily Libya and the area around that, into Europe, and it's causing a big problem. An additional concern is that the Islamic State, as well as Al-Qaeda, may be sending, and I think it's more than maybe, I think they are sending, their own people, disguised as refugees, immigrants, into Europe. There's been many people that have been commenting that the fact that they look at the pictures of the so-called refugees fleeing, ostensibly from Syria, but also from Libya, and most of them are young men. They're not women and children. Yes, there's some women and children, but the majority of them are young men, and they're fleeing into Europe, Germany, France, even Sweden, throughout the European community. Now, they're going to Germany because Germany actually ran a campaign trying to attract people. Well, I think they bit off more than they can chew. But we shouldn't be having this. And the only reason we have it is this administration, and also Secretary of State Hillary Clinton when she was in that administration. And she, in particular, argued strongly for intervention into Libya. And as a result, yeah, we killed Gaddafi, or the rebels killed Gaddafi, and the regime was overthrown. But is it better today than it was then? Well, I think the answer objectively is no. It's actually a lot worse. It's anarchy. It's a failed state. And if you look at some of the players, major players there, they don't like us. As a matter of fact, if you're an American, you'll get killed. If you're a Christian, you'll get killed. You've seen the very provocative YouTube videos where they're killing, in this case, Egyptian Christians, Coptic Christians, beheading them. So my verdict, I think, is a fair one, that President Obama's foreign policy is a complete, utter disaster. Now, he thinks his legacy will be this Iranian nuclear deal. I simply think we have a president that's delusional. I think he's out of touch with reality. And it's not me saying it. It's generals and people that are aware of what's going on. They can't understand whatever would possess Barack Obama to agree to this treaty. It's not a treaty. It's an agreement with Iran that gives Iran upwards of $150 billion. Remember, Iran, or the Islamic Republic of Iran, is the leading state sponsor of terrorism. And we are giving them money. Ultimately, they will have, and I already believe they have, a nuclear weapon. They just haven't tested it. But in the next 5, 10, 15 years, they will stockpile a number of nuclear weapons. And at some point, we'll learn about it. At least Donald Trump would make sure that they lived up to the letter of that agreement. I'm not sure that's the best course. That's one approach. The other is just to tear it up, and that's what some of the other Republican candidates are suggesting. The problem is President Obama should never have been negotiating with this terrorist regime. There's a long history, and the Iranians know this history very well. Unfortunately, the Americans don't. There's animosity between the Iranian people and the American people. Why? Because we intervene in Iran and overthrew a government there. Our CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, did it. But we weren't the first. Russia, Great Britain, were doing the same for decades. And the Iranians actually, at one time, were seeking out the United States because they were tired, if you will, of the interventionism of Russia. And this is when the Tsar was on the throne. But even when the Soviet Union, when the Tsar was overthrown and Lenin took over the government, we had a communist government, there's been relationships, some good, some bad, between Iran and Russia. The big intervener was Great Britain, and the reason was very simple. They needed oil, because Winston Churchill took the Royal Navy from being coal-fired to oil-fired, and that required oil. And the one thing that Iran has, Iran was a very, very poor country with very limited resources, but the resources that were discovered were oil. And Great Britain needed that oil to fight World War I, World War II, as well as to defend its empire, and the crown jewel of that empire was India. The government of Great Britain has always tried to control what's happening in Iran. They ultimately were thrown out, but they controlled the oil for many, many years and took advantage of it. So now the Iranians simply and understandably do not want foreign governments, whoever they are, to be exploiting their oil reserves. Now, they need the technology and the skills required to find, produce, and get the oil out of the ground, but they don't want the lion's share of the profits to go to foreign governments, whoever they are. So they have a natural hostility to Russia, Great Britain, the United States, any foreign governments. See, the problem with intervening in any country, let's say the United States were to go back into Iraq, or maybe even go to war with Iran, what's the problem? We don't know their language, we don't know their culture, we don't know their history, we certainly don't understand their religion. And as a result, while we're very good at winning battles or the war, we lose the peace. We have the strongest armed forces in the world. There's really nobody that can take us on, whether it's conventionally or nuclear. For example, it would be very, very easy, but dangerous, if the United States were to take out, by launching a cruise missile attack, all the Russian aircraft and tanks that are there. They could do it. Not hard. We have the missiles. We have the capability. We know where they are. The danger is you could start World War III. And why would you do it? As Trump was saying, we don't really know much about the rebels. Now, I know a little bit more, maybe more than Trump, but they're not good guys. They're Islamic jihadists. They're extremists. There are really no moderates, no matter what John McCain says. And that's the problem. Neither side, and it's really multiple sides, there's no good choices here, folks. And maybe that's what President Obama is saying when we need strategic patience. The problem is the perception around the world is we have withdrawn from the Middle East and that we're weak. We don't want to get involved. What you need to do is articulate a strategy so the American people understand it, first and foremost, but also our allies and the people in the world, whatever that strategy is. And I agree that we should put in motion military actions that will ultimately destroy, kill the Islamic State, all their supporters. But we shouldn't be sending our sons and daughters to do that. It's really up to the Sunnis in the area to destroy the Islamic State because they share the religion. Anyone else does it, we become the enemy. And that's the problem. If we take one side, then the other side considers us an enemy. There are no good sides. Stay out. And if the Russians want to destroy the various al-Qaeda groups in Syria that are fighting Assad, and after they've finished with them, or concurrent with, go on and attack the Islamic State in Raqqa, for example, or where in Syria they're active, fine with me. I agree with Trump. Stay out. But Trump makes a very good point. That's Syria. Iraq is a different kettle of fish because we have a history there. And right now, because of the lack of leadership and the lack of listening or the inability to listen to his military advisors. And remember, his military advisors were telling him, you have to keep a force of anywhere between 25,000 to 50,000 in Iraq to keep the ethnic and religious groups apart. That, in a nutshell, what several generals that knew what was happening in Iraq were advising. All that advice was ignored. Because Barack Obama wanted to keep a political promise to pull all our troops out, and he's considering the very same thing in Afghanistan. You see, I'm against interventionism because it never ends well. We get in messes like this. But you got to play the hand that was dealt to you, and throwing in the hand in the middle of the game, and it's not a game, actually makes the situation a lot worse. Because if you withdraw suddenly, and that's exactly what he did, what happens? Other nations come into the picture. Now, Iran is the next-door neighbor of Iraq. They were always in the picture, but now they have a lot more influence for the simple reason the Iraqis, as well as the Iranians, do not want to see the Islamic State succeed because they know the Islamic State would kill every single Shia soldier, civilian that they would capture or make sex slaves of them, slaves of the women. But they would kill men, women, and children, and that's what they've done. And they're trying to provoke the United States to go back into Iraq. So we need leadership. We need somebody that's going to really study the situation, get smart on the situation, and not simply walk away from it. So while I don't completely agree with Trump, we do need to take a leadership role and encourage Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt, the Sunnis, to destroy the Islamic State in Iraq. And then train and equip the various Sunni tribes that are there, and it's very much a tribal nation. Train those so they can defend themselves against who? Against the Iraqi Shias. And we also need to provide equipment, training, intelligence to the Kurds that are in northern Iraq. Like I said, there's no simple answers, but just leaving and wiping your hands of it or flying minimum amount of air missions, namely 10 a day, that's hardly anything, is not going to work. Air power alone cannot win against the Islamic State, will not destroy it. So if the Russians want to destroy the Islamic State as well as al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda, fine with me. I'm not going to lose any sleep. What the Russians are doing is what we should have been doing in Iraq, providing the air power that the Iraqis need to defend themselves. And that was one of the missing components. You also need armor, tanks. And the reason is, the Iraqi army largely fled, many of them, to the Islamic State. We disbanded the officer corps largely in Iraq. And as a result of elections, what the Iraqi government has done is favored Shia. They don't want Sunnis in the army. So you have three distinct groups that have religious and ethnic differences. The Kurds are a separate ethnic group. They're Sunnis, but they're in northern Iraq. The Sunnis, including the Islamic State, are largely in western central Iraq, and the Shias are in Baghdad and south. If you had a map, you get the idea. Iraq needs to be divided up into three very distinct states. That's what needs to happen. Now, the problem is, where is the oil? Most of the oil, not all the oil, is in southern Iraq. That's controlled by the Shias. That's why Iran is interested in Iraq. It's the oil, folks. You get back to what is the national interest of all these nations in the Middle East. It's oil. It always has been and it always will be. Because besides oil, there's very, very little in Iraq and Iran that, for example, the Western nations want. There's some resources, but it's predominantly oil. In the case of Iran, natural gas. That's why Great Britain got involved early, prior to World War I, when it was switching its navy over to oil. And that's driving, to a certain extent, our national policy. Now, for all practical purposes, the United States could be completely independent of any foreign nations because we have huge reserves of oil and natural gas, and because of advances in technology, including fracking, directional drilling and fracking, we have discovered more oil and more natural gas. We're now the leading producer of oil and natural gas in the world. We've dramatically increased our reserves. The problem is we have not extended that development and exploration into the federal lands. And the government owns, especially in the West, but in many states, a large percentage of the land that could provide revenues for the government if it would open up those reserves. Well, President Obama doesn't want to do that. He thinks the answer is windmills and solar panels. Well, excuse me, sir. Windmills and solar panels cannot power an industrial nation. Look no further than China. China is building and has been building for many years now nuclear plants as well as coal-fired plants. Why? They have the coal and they can buy the fuel they need for the nuclear plants. And that's what they're doing. And yes, it's very dirty because they don't have the money to spend for the scrubbers that get out the particulate matter and other gases that pollute their atmosphere, unlike the United States, which does that. That's why Russia is in Syria. It has its eye on the oil and gas, even though Russia has huge reserves of natural gas as well as oil. And they're shipping a lot of that natural gas through to Europe, to Germany, to Poland, to many of the countries in Europe. That's how they earn their foreign exchange. The overwhelming majority of their foreign exchange is earned on the sale of natural gas and to a lot lesser extent, oil. Now, they have a lot of natural resources beyond that, just like the United States does, for example, in coal. Russia is now back in the Middle East. They were kicked out of both Egypt and Syria, but they're back. Largely because of the failed foreign policy of this president. He succeeded in destabilizing most of the Middle East and Northern Africa. But as a result, we have a failed state in Libya. We have civil wars raging in both Iraq and Syria, and they're spreading into Yemen. And the Saudis are fearful that it could spread into their nation. And the Saudis are Sunni, a much smaller nation. They have a good size air force and some military, but they are directly threatened both by the Islamic Republic of Iran as well as the Islamic State. They don't like either group either, because both of them want to overthrow the royal Saud family. So where do we go? I like Donald Trump's foreign policy in regards to the Middle East. Makes more sense than I've heard from Barack Obama. What he has done is not strategic patience. It's strategic surrender and withdrawal, and that's retreat. And the nations of the world see it. You can't hide that. We are, the United States, at least when Obama entered office, the world's foremost superpower, the only superpower. And like I said earlier, we can beat any nation in a war, both conventional and nuclear, and the other nations know that. Europe, if you combine all the peoples in Europe into one group, are roughly equivalent to the United States, but they spend very little on defense, very little. Yes, they buy weapons from the United States, such as the F-16, but they rely on the United States to be policemen of the world. And as a result, they've cut back on their defense spending and increased their welfare spending. You see, the United States has become a welfare warfare state. Europe is predominantly a huge welfare state. Both the United States, though, and Europe has a problem. And the problem is, as we have an aging population, the cost of that welfare states escalates, becomes a burden. And because the local people are simply not replacing their population, and you usually need about 2.1 is the number you hear, most of the European countries, including Russia, are way below that. Italy, Germany, France, United Kingdom are way below 2.1. So they need immigration, but the problem is they're being flooded by largely believers in Islam. In other words, largely Arabs from the Middle East, as well as Northern Africa. And that's destabilizing their country. You see, there is blowback from a failed foreign policy. Oh, yes, we were. If the goal was to destabilize Northern Africa and the Middle East, the United States has succeeded. I don't consider that a success. I consider that a total, complete failure. Because now what's happening, because of this mass migration, which really is an invasion, very similar to the invasion of the United States from Mexico and Central America, the difference is Europe is being now invaded by Muslims. And they have a much higher birth rate, 3 or 4, not less than 2. So what happens is, to the extent that they settle in Europe, in Germany, in France, in the United Kingdom, in Netherlands, in any country, it only takes a few decades before they're a large minority, and if it continues, they become a majority. That is what's happening today in Europe. They are being invaded largely because of the unintended consequences of the United States' foreign policy. Remember, millions of people have fled from Syria, mainly because of Assad, but also because of Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. People flee. They're running for their lives. They don't want to be in the middle of a civil war, and they don't want to be killed by people that will kill you if you don't agree or don't have the same religion. It's only natural. And those radical extremists, the Islamic jihadists, whether they're in the Islamic State or in Iran, you better believe they are sending people into Europe and into the United States as sleepers initially, but ultimately to engage in mischief, in other words, violence, bombings, terrorist activities. And what they're trying to do, I think unsuccessfully, is provoke the United States and to a lesser extent the nations of Europe to be re-engaged, in other words, send back ground troops into Iraq and Syria. That is a great temptation, but it's a temptation that needs to be avoided. But at the same time, you need to support our allies, whether it's Israel, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt. Provide them leadership, intelligence, equipment, but let them do the fighting because they have the most interest in doing the fighting. That's what needs to be done. What should be avoided is never going back there with massive troops, because we've seen how that has ended, and it has not ended well. We initially were liberators in Iraq, and within a year, it got worse and worse because we were seen as an occupying army, and our troops were simply not, while they're great winning wars, they're not trained or equipped to win the peace. They don't know the language, they don't know the culture, they don't know the religion, and they're not policemen, they're soldiers. There's a big difference between patrolling a beat and being a soldier where you're trying to kill the enemy. And that is the big mistake that the United States makes. There's nobody good at that. And if the Russians want to re-engage in the Syria, fine. You saw what happened when they got engaged in Afghanistan. That didn't end well for them. Ultimately, they withdrew. They couldn't win. And that will always happen when you are viewed as the occupier. If someone tried to invade the United States, they would have that problem, because the Americans are well armed, and you would go after any foreign government that had a presence here in terms of troops. Well, don't you think the same thing applies when we send our soldiers into nations that we know little or nothing about? And like I say, we can win the war. That's not the problem. The problem is the peace. Because once the war is over, the native population are expecting you to provide security, electrical power, water power, police, men patrolling. And if you don't, what soon happens is an insurgency where people are trying to kill American soldiers. And that's what's happened in Iraq. Are we going to repeat that mistake again? And that's what's happened in Afghanistan. You're supposed to learn from your mistakes, not repeat them. So why President Obama's actions are a failed foreign policy, We need to move on from here. And the question is, what is the political viable policy or strategy to follow? It is not one of continually intervening in country after country. Down that road is endless war. And we spend our treasure and we spend our blood and get little thanks for it. I'm not saying this is easy. And many times you have leaders in the White House, including the current one, that simply don't put foreign policy first. As a matter of fact, many of them simply don't want to deal with it. Well, you have to deal with it because that is a key function of the federal government, is to protect the people of this country from foreign invasion, but more importantly, being killed across the world by the likes of the Islamic State. So there's a middle ground, but it's not easy to determine exactly what that middle ground is and what you need to be doing in that middle ground. I'm looking at the time. I'm going to have to wrap up the show. But I wanted to give you a heads up as to what is happening in Syria. Namely, the Russians are now fully engaged. They brought in upwards of 50 aircraft, fighter aircraft, attack aircraft, and now, as of yesterday, they have launched cruise missiles, 26 cruise missiles, into Syria. Our government is saying at least 4 of those missiles crashed in Iran. I don't know, and frankly, I don't care, because they're killing rebels, and most of those rebels are not our friends. Maybe some of them are, but most of them aren't. Donald Trump, I think, is on the right track. And like he said, he would need to study it, both the Iran nuclear deal, but also what's happening in Syria and Iraq. He makes more sense than many are supposed experts on the subject. And be very, very careful of that group, the neoconservatives in the Republican Party, that want the United States to intervene almost everywhere and be policemen of the world. They are warmongers. They're interventionist warmongers. They call me a non-interventionist, or isolationist is what they prefer. I'm not an isolationist. We need to be engaged in the world. But that doesn't mean we fight in nation after nation after nation. We're not the Roman Empire. And I'm not saying we should be or are. In other words, the people that are there have to settle their own problems. They have to deal with their own problems. It's not the responsibility of the United States to build nations or set up democracies, especially in cultures with populations that have never had democracy. With that, let me play America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.